Okay. There, I never get to do that, so there we go. My name is Ben Ball, and I'd just like to welcome everybody to the Writers Advisory Council meeting for May 2013. We're going to start off with our public comment period. How many people do we have on the docket tonight?
Right now we have three, starting out with Chris Barnes.
Mr. Barnes.
First, I want to say thank you for the recent listening session in Alexandria. You told the board you heard a lot of new information the next day, and I just wanted to say if you were on Twitter and followed the WMATA conversation, a lot of what was said at the listening session wouldn't be new to you. So once again, I encourage everyone to get on Twitter and follow the WMATA conversation, and if you need help doing that, I'm perfectly happy to point you in the right direction. The next thing I wanted to point out is that we really need to continue working on a Writer's Bill of Rights. It was brought up in the last two subcommittees, and I just want to stress the importance of that. Some of the points that need to be included are no more peak fares during track work, especially weeknights, midnight to 3 a.m., refunds for bad service due to mechanical failure like this morning, and for people who go into a station and find they can't go anywhere and leave. They should be able to get refunds for that. Communications improvements. I think riders deserve better communication. Some of what you're presenting to the board reflect that. But I did want to point out that the Metro Ford blog, if you even knew they have a blog, died today when Postures died. So there's no longer even a Metro Ford blog to explain what is happening. Disabled train promises, how long can they hold you in a train, when to self-evacuate, that kind of stuff needs to be included in the Writers' Bill of Rights, and improve police response times. I think riders should have confidence that when they call the 202 number, they're going to get a response faster than 9 minutes inside a metro station. The other thing I wanted to ask is, where is the WMATA support for this RAC? There was no in-station announcements for this meeting. They could have used the TV screens for this. No website mentions. One advisory went out, but you had to dig for it on the website. And only a couple of tweets, and tonight they even put the wrong address on the tweet. So that's a little embarrassing. So I would encourage you to ask WMATA to do better advertising this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. We do our best to throw people off. You know, keep them guessing. Who's next?
Okay, since many of you guys don't do Twitter, and you really, really should, here were some of the big trends for the last few weeks. A lot of people noticed that when they do repair work and shut down stations on the weekends, the following week, there's major, major delays. If you remember back to earlier last month, we had 3 weeks of no track work and maybe one major delay. So it's a coincidence, maybe, but in the past 8 business days, we've had 5 major meltdowns when the track work began 2 weekends ago. So maybe something to look into. Either Metro is rushing or is unable to handle what they're trying to do. Another major thing that popped up, caught my eye, was a boycott. Now, obviously, riders are not organized or unionized or anything like that, so I don't think anything would come of it, but that's the direction of the riders' thinking, boycotting. Or I think of it as finding other alternative methods other than WMATA, like I have because I'm doing bike share. So that's another road you're going to have to pass. Third thing is the fight. Let's talk about our buddy Stessel saying that there was Metro was warned about a, quote, possible social disorder. Yet they had bag checks at some faraway station at the same time that the ruckus happened at Gallery Place Chinatown, and they had to call in backup. Find that utterly ridiculous. And, of course, I think he lies to us. So he should be fired. Thanks.
do. Number three is?
Number three of four now. Hat host.
Hat host.
There we go. Thanks. It's kind of hard for me to come up here after the great Mr. Barnes stole over my thunder. I could be up here ranting and raving for days, but I'll keep it pretty simple. Especially the $10 million plan to renovate the Bethesda Metro Station is absolutely insulting, and any taxpayer within the metro area should be absolutely offended by this just awful display of arrogance on behalf of WMATA. You guys have the balls to come up 2 years ago and claim we have a $100 million deficit more than that, and that we need to jack up fares to keep service running. And then 2 years later, when, oh, we're all back to normal, oh, we got the extra money to waste on how a metro station looks. That's just absolutely, I can't comprehend it. You can't even get to 6 a.m. without having major track meltdowns. And we're not talking 15, 20 minutes here. We're talking 45 minutes to an hour. People are talking about having 45-minute commutes go to two and a half hours. That's just absolutely unacceptable. Weekend track work has absolutely destroyed any way for anyone to get reliably around on the weekends. We have major crime problems on the Metro. We had that fight last weekend, which was absolutely absurd. If you watch the tape, it's probably a good 30, 45 seconds to a minute. You don't even see a single transit police officer anywhere in the area. That's absolutely scary. You know, you guys cater to the tourists, you know, no track work during cherry blossoms. How do you think they're going to react when they see chaos, violent chaos going on in one of the busiest Metro stations in the circuit? I mean, it's absolutely disgraceful. I hope that, you know, I appreciate the RAC, and I appreciate you guys taking your time to hear from riders, but WMATA's arrogance to our concerns and the work you guys do is just absolutely disgraceful, and there need to be major, major changes starting at the top, moving on the way down. Thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least.
Colin Reich.
So a long-time writer, first-time RAC attendee, I appreciate you guys taking the time out of your lives to serve on this body. You know, I've been riding the Metro every day to and from work for nearly 3.5 years, and over that span of time, I've seen little improvement in the quality of service. In fact, in addition to the increasing delays and malfunctions, as a Blue Line rider, I've actually seen fares increase while the quality and frequency of my service has severely diminished, with the added expectation that soon I'll be paying more for even less frequent service. That is unacceptable, as is the general state of this system. Despite claims that rider satisfaction is nearly 80%, I believe I speak for thousands of Metro riders when I say that we're tired of paying for service we don't receive. We're tired of fighting for refunds and remedies against a bureaucracy that could have been pulled directly from a Kafka novel. We're tired of the uncertainty each morning when we board a train, hoping that it doesn't offload at the next stop or stall in the next tunnel. We're tired of weekend track work that renders the system useless with no apparent improvements, as escalator outages and track problems occur where repairs were supposedly made just days earlier. We're tired of what seems like a complete lack of accountability by leadership and a staff that is figuratively and sometimes literally asleep at the wheel. We're tired of never receiving answers when we ask questions or request information about a system that we rely upon for our very safety. How do we know trains are being inspected for problems, for example? I could go on, but I suspect you've heard this all before. So I'm asking you all to do something about it, to stand up for the riders that you represent, and to ensure that Metro is actually accountable to its customers. We need a Riders' Bill of Rights, so I second that motion. We need it because in our nation's capital, citizens should be able to ride public transit with the confidence that they will get to and from work safely and on time. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just thank you to the public commenters. We always appreciate when people come out, and we are working on a lot of these. You'll see some of them on the agenda tonight. Some of them are in the process of moving through the committees, or some still a little more in the idea phase. But we are, I think it's fair to say, working on most, if not all, of these concerns in one form or another. Okay. Now that our public comment period is over, I'd like to hear a motion for approval. Oh, wait, sorry. We're doing this by unanimous consent now. So if there are no objections to approval of the agenda and the minutes, we do not have, correct?
Correct.
So there's no objection to approval of the agenda? Okay. We will move along then. And I will welcome the new chief of the Metro Transit Police, Ronald Pavlik. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I guess I'll sit here if that's right. Thank you for this opportunity. And speaking with John, I thought it was a great opportunity, so at least you can put a face with a name now. My name's Ron Pavlik. I was sworn into the Chief of Police on March 29th and have assumed the role that Chief Taborn once assumed. Just kind of want to give a little background for me. I've been here about 18 years with Metro. Started here, obviously, as a patrol officer and worked my way up to the chief now. Obviously, I've heard some of the concerns this evening and interesting comments as well, obviously. But I think as far as the transit policer go, you know, we're very committed and dedicated to our riders and our customers as well as our employees. You know, their safety and the safety of our customers is always going to be the number one priority for us. How we address crime is always changing. We monitor our trends and our hotspots through a very elaborate process called CompStat. We call it MetroStat, but basically it looks at crime trends, and we're actually looking now into like predictive policing and trying to predict where the next crime might occur through great use of technology, whether it's through cameras, whether it's through intelligence and things of that nature. Some other things we do on a regular basis is every day we participate in a daily conference call with the Metropolitan Police Department and other key stakeholders in the city. And every day we talk basically about youth and youth disorder and where intelligence that's gathered from the schools from day-to-day activities and how those activities might spill into the metro system. So that's part of our strategy on how we're reducing and disrupting some of the youth disorder that we see sometimes in our system. Other things that we're constantly doing is working with our federal partners. You look at the recent incident in Boston, literally within probably several minutes of that event occurring, I met with some of the key stakeholders through a conference call so they could bring me up to speed what was going on in Boston and how that it was impacting or may impact our region. As everyone's well aware, we stood up our security for that entire week and changed our posture a little bit. And as that information continues to develop and change, then you'll see the posture, the deployment of how transit police are deployed change. So we continue to work with our definitely local, state, and federal partners. Obviously, being a big transit, the second largest transit system, it is challenging. A lot of the concerns we have with youth, I think one thing we always got to keep in mind is that we are DC's public school bus system. Unlike the suburbs where they have a county school system or a bus system that, you know, transport young riders back and forth, well, the metro is basically the school bus of the city, and it, sometimes that can be challenging on how you manage that and how those kind of incidents sometimes take place in our system. We don't like seeing or hearing them any more than our customers or employees do, and we do our best to try to keep our hands on that. So we're going to continue with that. I think hopefully you're going to see good things change. We have a lot of new projects on the horizon for transit police. We're getting a new records management system, a computer-aided dispatch. We're getting a lot of new tools that are going to work out to our advantage. It's going to help our officers out on real-time information sharing and intelligence sharing and things of that nature. So I think all in all, you're going to see some good things coming out of the transit police over time, and we're going to continue on protecting and serving our customers that we rely on each and every day. So I don't think anybody has any questions of me.
All right. Thank you very much for coming, first of all. And I also just want to sort of throw it out there, you know, we're here to represent rider concerns, but we're also here as sort of a feedback mechanism from riders to Metro as well. So I just encourage you, you know, as you go on your job, if you find things that you'd like some rider feedback from, or you, you know, you need somebody to bounce things off of, please feel free to see us as a resource for you as well. And in particular, we have our new Safety and Security Committee, which meets every second Wednesday of the month, which is a smaller group, a little more refined in terms of what it looks at. So please consider that also a resource for you going forward. I'll just start off by opening up to public comments for our usual practice. Anyone?
Can we please get a number, emergency number like 911 instead of the 202, whatever it is, because nobody knows it. It's kind of stupid because nobody knows it.
I would love to address that with you. Actually, because we're a tri-state police department, we're the only non-federal tri-state police department in the United States. We don't have the ability to have a 911 system because we cross through multiple jurisdictions. Obviously, the Commonwealth of Virginia, the state of Maryland, the District of Columbia, and several municipalities. There's no difference if you call 911 in a city police department, it's going to ring to that county jurisdiction. So we can't have our own unique three-digit number like you speak of because of the tri-state jurisdiction, those challenges that you would have to get with all those different jurisdictions that we cross over.
Okay, so is there a way to change the law?
It'd be extremely challenging considering you have to have two states and the city to agree to it. To mention all the municipalities that are involved in between here, East Falls Church, West Falls Church, the city of Alexandria. I mean, it would be a very daunting task that I could challenge, I guess, the RAC to do, maybe.
All right, so the response time would have been how much different if Fridays if someone calls 911 than the 202 number?
Depending on the jurisdiction and the nature of the call, the 911 system is dealt with in two ways. Either the local jurisdiction will handle the call. If it's a life-threatening emergency situation, they'll start sending officers, or they will forward the call to our 911 center. So depending on the jurisdiction, and it varies from state to state or city to city, but it's handled either one of those two ways. Either they manage the call, they'll take the initial call information down and start sending officers, or they'll record that information and then call us. So it depends. With each jurisdiction, we have what we call a hotline, where we hit one button and it rings that local jurisdiction police department. So that communication is very fluid and it happens every day.
All right, one more question. These bag checks, they're ridiculous. I mean, you can check on Twitter, hey, they're doing bag checks at East Falls. I mean, they're not doing what they're supposed to do, and they never have, and it's an annoyance. And I was at the thing 2 years ago, and they said, well, it's X number, we'll check number X bag. Well, if I have three bags, are you going to check all three? No, you're supposed to check one, the specific number that's designated. So I think money well spent somewhere else, maybe hire a few more cops. Because what happened Friday happens a lot. I mean, I saw a robbery at Boston right in front of my eyes. Poor guy got knocked down. Not a cop in sight on a Saturday. I mean, you guys are thinned out. Use that money. Buy some cops. Train them. Let's make the system, it's not safe.
Thank you. I will note that the emergency number issue has come up multiple times here. It doesn't have to be a three-digit number, just something that riders can remember. My suggestion has always been 1-800-GO-METRO, but I welcome other suggestions as well. Okay, any other public comments, sir?
Hi, I'm Chris Barnes, also known as Fix WMATA on Twitter. I just want to say thank you for joining us tonight and give us some insight into your new position. I think a lot of riders are really concerned about the lack of seeing officers at further out stations. You can go to Gallery Place or Metro Center and you see them everywhere. Sometimes they have a dog even. But I think riders mostly would prefer to see them on trains and on buses. And I guess my question is that a lack of funding for staff? Or are there other priorities that say we need to have eight officers at Gallery Place?
Basically, the way we deploy our officers is based on our crime trends. So we would look at our crime trend and say, okay, you look at where those crimes are occurring or where those hot spots might be. So you might see more officers at Gallery Place because there might be an event there. So I think the other night you had Rihanna in concert there. So we're going to up-staff, obviously, for that surge of people and possible issues that might arise out of a concert setting or the Nationals or any venue where there's a special event. Our outlying stations, you know, we have a number of officers where are dedicated just to riding trains or dedicated just to riding buses, and we're constantly moving that. So we don't have a set number every single day. We let our crime stats divide how we're going to deploy them, where we're going to deploy them, what kind of hours they're going to work. So it's all very fluid and it changes almost every day.
As a follow-up to that, is there anything riders can do to maybe pressure the board or whoever needs to be pressured to get more officers on trains and on buses?
I think any chief in the National Cavalry Region will always ask for more police officers. I think it's the key is how do you deploy those assets. You know, you got X number of resources, and it really comes down to how wisely you're deploying them, how wisely you're using them, the partnerships you have with the local jurisdictional police. All those play into factors of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other public comments before we?
Hi, thanks. I haven't really had too many bad things happen to me on the Metro or witnessed any other crimes, but I can tell you an experience I had in December where I was unjustly threatened with arrest for having the gall to question an officer. I had an officer accuse me of fare evading. I walked through the turnstile, and apparently it did not run my card like it was supposed to. I would say about 10 yards later, I felt someone grab me from behind by my collar. I was instinctively scared because usually when something like that happens, it usually means you're about to get robbed or violently assaulted. It was an officer. He immediately accused me of fare evading. He's like, why didn't you pay the fare? And I'm like, I'm sorry, sir. I don't know what you're talking about. I did pay the fare. He's like, no, you didn't. It didn't let you through. I'm like, well, let's go run my car. Let's make sure that it ran, you know, make sure it didn't get flagged. It must be some mistake. So he handed my car to the attendant. I don't know what happened, but he said, no, it didn't ring you up. So instead of simply telling me to go back through and, you know, making sure that I take my time to go through the turnstiles, he kept saying, do you want to be arrested? Do you want to be arrested? I was like, sir, you know, I would not fare evade. You know, I don't need to fare evade. I didn't hop the turnstiles or anything. And he just kept saying, shut your mouth or I'm going to arrest you. I want to know why that is appropriate response from an officer. And even when I asked him, you know, what's your name? What's your badge number? He refused to tell me this. As the chief of police, how would you feel as this response is?
Obviously, I would need to look into that and have a little bit more information. So if you could give me a date, time, and when this event occurred in your name, I'd definitely look into it. Officers are required.
How would you look into it?
Hopefully, you'd be able to describe them. And then depending how long ago it is, I could look at schedules and try to backtrack. There's only so many officers that would probably be working that particular area. So it'd be a matter of just narrowing it down to who it was.
I appreciate that, sir. I don't think there's really any way you could follow up on that, or nor you would, given the history of WMATA. But I would like to let you know that it's absolutely wrong and insulting for officers to threaten fair-paying citizens who have the gall to question them when they've been not only assaulted, because when you touch someone, that's assault. And thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none. We're just going to go around. I saw Kara's up first, if that's okay. If the gentleman from Maryland will sit there. All right. Go for it.
I'm James Wright. Let me just say, first of all, Chief, that I am a graduate of the Prince George's County Citizens Police Academy. I'm active in the Alumni Association of that police academy. And I'm very active in the Seat Pleasant's Citizens Police Advisory Committee. So you're talking to a somewhat of a comrade of sorts. Two quick questions. Are you all still monitoring the situation at the Addison Road Seat Pleasant station, where a few months ago you had a big ruckus between young people from Central High School and H.D. Woodson in the district? Are you still monitoring that situation? And number two, have you all looked into possibly setting up, like they have with the Prince George's Police, maybe a Citizens Police Academy for Metro? I'm just asking.
Yeah, as far as the incident at Addison Road, shortly after that incident, we met with the principal of Central High School. And along with Major Nader, he's the district commander out of Addison Road. And we've since kind of calmed that down a little bit. One thing you've noticed, if you've been recently to Addison Road and at the Anacostia station, we've mounted a kind of circular type thing along the guardrail inside the bus bay. And that's to prevent people from sitting on there. We found out that if you don't make it inviting for someone to sit and linger, then they won't have that opportunity to do so. So if you notice at Anacostia and Addison Road in particular, we've made those kind of security enhancements. And basically it's looking through crime prevention through environmental design, SEPTED. And we look for innovative ideas like that, whether it's increased lighting, increased cameras, or those type devices that discourages people from hanging out. So Addison Road is one of our quieter stations, actually. We've had two spikes recently in the past, probably about 6 months or so ago, with auto theft. We made a great lockup out of there. It was two juveniles who attended Central High School. They would have a tendency to not go to school and then go break in our cars. So that has died down completely since we've made that arrest. As far as the Explorer program, I am familiar with that Prince George's County Police offers. It is a worthwhile program. It just takes a lot of money to get that off the ground and running. And then, you know, you have to be at least 21 to be a police officer. So it's just a cost investment that I don't know if we decide as an organization something we're going to do.
Thank you. Carl?
Hi. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. I want to talk about the conduct similarly to the gentleman of the police, the Metro Police. oftentimes I do notice they will be crowding. I understand that police officers need to have backup and it's good for them to be in pairs, but I don't see what the use of congregating together and chatting is. Oftentimes I'll see police officers scrolling on their phones. Who's to say that they're texting you or someone, but for the most part it looks like they're not really paying attention. They're bored. I think that, well, for one, it's frustrating because, you know, they're in a public job, and when I worked at public jobs, I was held accountable if I was BSing on the job. And for two, it's a lack of awareness of what's going on. I mean, someone could just be peeing right in front of them and they wouldn't be paying attention. On top of that, I would also like to bring up the situation where a police officer tackled a young woman, and I'm not quite sure for what the reason was. I think she was talking back to him, and her skirt was, she was wearing a skirt, and her skirt was flipped over her waist, so her bottom half was exposed. And I don't see how I'm wondering on what grounds can a police officer touch someone, and if that is appropriate, or if he needs to call backup, or if, you know, like, what type of threat does someone have to be before they are touched? And like he said, I mean, you touch someone, if I touched you, that would be assault and assaulting a police officer. Whereas if, you know, this gentleman was touched by a police officer, nothing happened. And again, and what if you react? And then, anyways, I would just like to, like I said, address the conduct of these people. I think it gives a lot of people a lack of faith to see that type of behavior.
Right. As far as the perception of them, you know, maybe not paying their full time attention, obviously I take that serious. I too want them, for their own safety, to be aware of what's going on around them. The perception maybe that they're congregating or hanging out, not doing anything, I think it's daytime and circumstances. If you see that routinely or see it at a station, then obviously I want to be made aware of that. Again, how we deploy, they might be there for a special event, or if they're checking their phone, they could be checking for something security related, but, you know, that, I guess that's up for debate. But if the perception's there, then obviously, you know, I want to be concerned with that as well, because I don't want that perception. Because you're right, you walking by for that split second, you only see what you see. You don't know if they've been there 2 minutes or 10 minutes or how long they've been there. So that's always a concern as well. As far as touching someone, you know, a police officer has the right to use the minimum amount of force necessary to effect an arrest. If you're talking about the video from, I believe it was Gallery Place, that went viral about a year or so ago, that particular individual was found guilty of their particular criminal charge that I'm not going to discuss tonight. But she nor anybody who was involved in that incident complained. We launched our own internal investigation based on that video, and we found nothing wrong with the incident. So.
Carl? Thanks for coming tonight. Just as a general observation, the last time I did see transit police on a train, they effectively dealt with a very unruly and rude passenger who was under the influence of some sort of narcotic and removed them from the train, and it was exceptionally professional, and it was not something that I have seen before happen, you know, right in front of my eyes. So I will say that there are some good stories out there. My main question for you tonight, though, is what can riders do to help make your organization more effective? Can we be providing better information when they're calling 911? I mean, what can we do to help improve response time?
I think there's a couple of things we could ask from either, you know, the Riders Advisory Council or our own customers. A lot of it's education awareness that we do a big part on, whether it's securing your electronic devices. You know, obviously everybody likes to use it and have technology at their fingertips, but just use it wisely. You know, try to keep it out of plain view. Don't stand near the train doors. If you see, you know, a number of individuals, three or four individuals come around you, you know, don't give them a target. Don't give them the opportunity. If you do find yourself as a victim of a crime, be a good witness. You know, try to keep in mind what they look like, you know, age, height, weight, any distinctive clothing, facial hair, things of that nature. Anything you could do to help us identify them, note the time so we can pull the video from the CCTV. Another issue that we're dealing with lately is the self-evacuation. You know, we don't want our customers on our track bed. You're much safer in a rail car during an incident than you are if you try to evacuate and find yourself on our roadway. The subway system is inherently a dangerous place. You have obviously the third rail that generates our train movement, but you as a customer who decides to evacuate our train car, you don't know where the train movements are. You don't know if the power's up, the power's down. You don't know if we're trying to bring in another train. So we ask our customers to, you know, don't evacuate. Be a little patient. Wait for that announcement from that train operator and wait for those next instructions. But it seems like the trend lately is customers who want to pop our emergency doors, and those doors should be a last resort, you know. So those are two big areas, I think, from a customer perspective, from a crime perspective, and then from just a rider, what to do in an emergency situation.
Okay. Thanks.
Another topic that we will be addressing later in this meeting, actually.
Oh, okay.
All right. We're a little over time for this agenda item, so I'll just ask RAC members to keep their questions as cursory as possible. Debbie?
I'm Debbie with Titus, and I'm from Fairfax. I thank you for coming. Can you give me the number, emergency number again, so I could pass it on to a deaf and hard of hearing community? The first time you was playing, I'm not getting them to you.
Sure. Our emergency phone number is 202-962-2121. Oh, sorry.
Alex?
Yeah, thanks for coming in as well. I appreciate the opportunity. I have to say, I've heard a few comments already tonight about the kind of lack of professionalism among the police officers at WMATA, and I do think it's a huge problem. I've seen many, many occasions where police have taken actions that were just way out of line for what they're dealing with. I mean, if you're dealing with, I remember last year, it's really affected me. One of the reasons I decided to join this council, watching someone get literally like thrown off through the turnstiles for being angry with somebody at the station when the train was an hour late. I mean, that's a failure all the way across. And I think you're being a little bit flippant about it. I understand it's your role, you're the boss of the police, but this is a huge issue of a lack of professionalism that I think the riders really, it's a huge concern. I also think that there's a big problem with security at overall at these metro stations. I mean, we are in Washington, D.C., one of the biggest potential terrorist targets in the world, and we're doing a terrible job, I think, of just basic monitoring of what's going on. I think we should have more bag checks, frankly. I mean, when you go on a train in China, you get your bag checked 50% of the time in Beijing. And why are they worried in Beijing? Now, and we can't even stop people from fighting in the train stations. And you're telling me that your solutions is basically something along the lines of, well, you know, we're monitoring crime and we're watching the statistics. Great. But we've got a lot more work to do better. And a long way to go before we're anywhere near where we need to be. So I hope that is a message that comes through today, because it's a big problem, both of those things, and something that I worry about fundamentally a lot.
Thank you. Lorraine?
Yes, I want to address an issue that has not been touched so far, and it's crowd control. We've had all these breakdowns that we keep having. Those platforms get overcrowded, and by the time I see any kind of reaction, the platforms are already, you know, filled to the, you know, at full, and the trains that keep, they may be single tracking or what have you, those trains still have to come in and offload. There's no place to offload those people. And it keeps happening. I don't know what is their response time or how, if they notify you immediately when there is this kind of situation where they have to offload trains, or because it takes way too much time for the police to get there. It's already in bad shape when the police comes in.
Right, and recently it was the Anacostia incident last year that we kind of changed some of our procedures. We looked at ways we communicate internally. We looked at how soon the police are notified of an incident, and I think you've seen hopefully an improvement in that. We don't wait for the incident to escalate now. We make an immediate, our rail transportation knows immediate notification to the transit police, and we'll start our assets that way now. So that is getting better and better, and I think we have training scheduled internally with Metro where that joint supervisor training is going to improve our response time and improve that internal communication because we haven't always done a good job in communicating internally. So we are working on that, and we're always trying to enhance it and improve it.
Thank you. Karen?
Thank you for coming here tonight. And I also want to thank you and all the transit police for all the work that you do to protect all of the riders in Metro. So we're all here. We have issues. But I think you guys do a fabulous job considering some of the resource constraints. So my question is, you said that Metro is the transportation system for the D.C. public schools. So how do you prevent incidents from happening within the school systems? What preventative measures do you have in place, and what partnerships do you have with the school systems?
We have a, I don't know if you heard my conversation earlier where we participate in a daily conference call. That's where we share intelligence that's going on in the school system. So if an incident occurs within that particular school, let's just say, I don't know, pick one, Anacostia High School, that information is relayed on that conference call. Any arrests that were made the night before that involve youth in the city, we share that information. So that information shared in almost real time on a daily basis. Other things we do is we have a great partnership with many of the schools. We've identified certain schools where you can identify them by their unique uniform that they wear. So in those situations, we meet with the school administrators, sometimes the principal, sometimes it's their staff, and we try to have school assemblies where we meet with the youth and we tell them what the expectations are when riding mass transit or public transit. So we kind of we've done different campaigns. We've had a respect campaign we did a little while ago. We've hired a new marketing director here at Metro that we're working with to come out with some campaigns on how do we reach the youth. We participated and actually hosted the mayor's youth forum here last month where we had, it was actually in this room and had about 100 youth from the city who participated. We listened to some of their concerns and we listened to some ideas on how we can better communicate with them. They do all through social media, so we're looking at different venues on how we can communicate and try to understand them a little more. I think some of the behavior you might see a youth use in our Metro system is inappropriate because of the confines of being in Metro. You know, it's underground or people feel confined, but if you were on a playground or street corner, you wouldn't second guess that child's behavior. So sometimes it's kids being kids, but they cross that line, and that's where the police come in. And I don't think it's a situation where we're going to arrest every kid for being disorderly in our system, but it's more of education awareness and sharing with them what our expectations of them are, what proper behavior is, and how we'd address that. And we address that through school assemblies, working with the administrators, and working really with DCPS, who's a big partner of ours and who we meet with on a regular basis.
Chief, thank you very much for joining us. You had mentioned in terms of covering the large events, the concerts at the Verizon Center and the games, that type of thing, in terms of extra deployment. My question is if, whether or not you can give a little bit more background on just the regular beat, what happens to the officers when y'all aren't being deployed for a specific event. And I'm asking that in the context of, you know, are there more officers obviously in the city versus out in the outer stations. How do you cover all of the stations that we have? What's the process behind that?
Well, just for security reasons, I won't give out, you know, definitive numbers on how many we have and how many stations or things of that nature, but put in context where, you know, the Metro Transit Police, the majority, I'd probably say about 80% of our officers walk a footbeat, where traditionally, you'll see in city police or county police where the majority of their officers drive a scout car, where it's kind of the opposite here. You know, our officers use the same means to get to calls and things of that nature as our customers. So if a call goes out at a particular station for, let's say, a break and entering from an auto, You know, that officer is going to wait for that train 7-8 minutes and then ride out to that end of line station, say Greenbelt, to take the report. Priority calls, we do have mobile police officers as well, so we dedicate a large number of officers to ride in the buses and the trains, and then we have another group of officers who augment them and ride in police cruisers. So, again, we deploy that based on our crime trends. So if we see spikes occurring in one particular jurisdiction, we might beef up that jurisdiction for a couple of days to try to combat that issue that's going on there. But, you know, whether it's motor officers, you know, on motorcycles responding, whether it's mountain bike officers or canine officers, we use a variety of different tactics to try to address that and just use our resources wisely. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's 86 stations. It's, you know, 12,000 bus stops, give or take. I mean, it's challenging. But I think we do it well. If you look at our crime stats on rail, you're about 6 out of 1 million riders of being a victim. On bus, it's about 1 out of every million riders. So I think if you compare our crime stats to the region, you're much safer at Metro than you are in any of the local jurisdictions. And it's just challenging. I mean, there's just no way around it. But I think we do a good job of it, you know, with the resources we have.
Thank you. Just one more question before I let you go.
Sure.
How do you police Metro access?
Metro access, as far as policing goes, we don't ride it like we do a Metro bus. Typically is what we'll do. They'll call us if and when they have an issue. So we respond usually after the fact, but we don't proactively police it on a policing atmosphere like we do our buses or rail system.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time. We very much appreciate it. And again, we look forward to working with you during your time here as chief. Feel free to see us as a resource going forward.
I really appreciate it. One final thought. Sure. We are hiring, so if there's anybody you know who's looking for a job as far as a sworn police officer or a special police officer, you know, we've always got our door open, and with the extension of the Silver Line and things going on as we're growing, we're always looking for those opportunities. So,
how many positions?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I know we have some vacancies. I would say a lot, but we have some vacancies. So, again, if you know any young, talented, or people who are interested in employment, please tell them to go to the website and fill out an application.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to our next agenda item. We're going to get the recap of our listening session, which was held last Wednesday. And I'm going to turn the floor over to Barbara Hermanson, our Virginia Vice Chair, for a recap.
Thank you. So, you have a recap in the handout tonight, so I'll let you all read that at your leisure if you haven't already. I just want to talk about a few of the points there. We had a real diversity of attendees in that we had riders, which is, of course, our target. We also had we had many of our members of the RAC, which I was really appreciated that I think we all learned a lot from it. But we also had a member of the board. We had you can't hear me? Sorry. I have never had that problem before. board member, Alexandria City personnel, various organizations that are transportation oriented in the area. So I think that mix really brought a great diversity of ideas and opinions and points of view. I definitely want to point out the appreciation for John and what he did. He did so much work finding the venue and organizing it and being there, managing what happened logistically. And also, he did provide a recap of the comments. We are planning an unabridged version of those notes. I had some note takers there that are going to be providing, if they haven't already, a detailed list of everything that was brought up, but a range of topics. So I heard nothing but appreciation from everybody there, from all of those different avenues. The writers seemed very appreciative that we did something like that, that it was set up in a forum that they could speak informally, casually with people that were interested in hearing them. Also, it was at the very next day was the Metro board meeting. And the chairman pointed out how appreciative he was that the RAC was getting involved in outreach to the riders, as you know, the board has many formal things on various topics, whether it's the Silver Line or bus changes, but they appreciated that we did that. So the bottom paragraph, I just talk a little bit about what I learned. It was interesting to me because, yes, I heard a lot of things I knew, but I also heard about a lot of things that people brought very different points of view than I had. And so, you know, there may be something that I'd observe, but it didn't occur to me that it was a problem, and to them it was a big problem. And then there were vice versa, where things that I would have thought would be a problem, and people would say, you know, that's not really a problem. So there's a lot of perspectives. You can look at the same incident or the same condition and describe it in a positive or a negative or a neutral way. And I just think it's really important, though, that all of us on the RAC remember that we're representing a lot of people, and even though, of course, we bring our own personal experiences to this committee, it's really important for us to do some kind of outreach, whether it's something like this or being involved in some community events or attending some of the bus hearings and the other formal formal sessions that already exist. So I think it was very worthwhile. We haven't really talked about next steps other than the unabridged list, and I think we need to do that, and I welcome thoughts on that, what we do with the information that we gathered. Thank you. Any questions? Do I get questions?
Sure.
Questions?
I will say that we circulated the notes amongst the leadership team, and we are, at least I am, already starting to think of next steps, some themes, some of which are already being dealt with in the committees, some of which are not. So I would expect some future action on this. But any questions or thoughts for Barbara before we move on? All right. Oh, yes. Go ahead.
So,
is your mic on?
There we go. Is my mic on? So, I think that, I was there and also took notes. And so I would hope that we would recognize that there were some general themes that were, and we should summarize. We shouldn't just make lists of what people talked about. We need to go to the general themes and then start asking ourselves, okay, so why do these themes exist? And I think part of our job is to kind of dig a little below the surface and then make recommendations on how we can fix what we think are the causes of some of these themes. And so for my view, one of the things I heard repeatedly, not only at the table I was at, but when everybody called out, was, so communication is not good. Not when there's emergencies, not when there's track work, you name it. We can't hear the people on the intercoms. There is this constant theme, and I was brought out here again, we can't communicate. So I think one of the things we need to ask ourselves and spend some time on is what causes this? Certainly Metro doesn't set out to be a bad communicator. So why are they bad communicators, or why do people perceive them to be bad? We should be looking into some of these things and not just, we shouldn't just stop here making a list of things, because this does nothing for the riders.
Well, and I never had any intention of implying that would be it, that we were just making a list.
I didn't say that.
No, okay. I just we hadn't really talked about what the action plan would be, but I fully expect there is one. And you're right, there. I did try to comment on the themes that I heard, and the number one was agreed upon. It was communication. We heard that in many, many ways, communication in 10 different ways and in 10 different situations. So I do think it's important that we had a reason for listening, not just to get the point of view, but also so that it informs us about, helps us decide on what are the things that we want to tackle and our priorities.
Okay. Yes, I see a public comment there.
I'll keep it short.
Okay.
I just want to say thank you again. I think as someone who attended the listening session, what you did in Alexandria was fantastic. It's exactly what you guys should be doing, and I want to encourage you to do more of them. I don't know if it was Alexandria because of all the Blue Line rider complaints, but seriously consider doing it in every jurisdiction. Do one a quarter, whatever you can do. But also, more importantly, you've got to get on WMATA about advertising this. It was basically advertised nowhere, and I really think the public turnout was very low because WMATA did nothing to help you guys get folks in those seats.
That's actually not true. John himself was down at the Metro station handing out flyers. The press release was out there. He alerted all the Alexandria Community Associations.
Was it on the website?
Yes, it was on the website.
You had to dig for it. Was it on the screens, the new TV screens?
That was not there.
No. There are a lot of avenues that it wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't advertised. Yeah. I mean, the rider turnout. I think we had what, 5 people from the public, the 3 of us. That.
No, I think it was more than that.
More than that. But anyway,
it was certainly less than 10. But I think you can do better, and you should continue doing these.
Yeah. I think it's, in general, I'll just say that on attendance, it is basically on par with all of the other public WMATA events that I've been to in terms of number of people who turn out. I've been to several sort of publicly announced, even advertised on the website and other places. It was about on par, actually. I went to several bus listening sessions, to various public outreach events, corridor studies, things like that. They all get about the same amount of attendance, and it's pretty similar to what we saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree that it would be great to get the word out much better, because I only heard about it because I got an email from John. But I know John had made attempts to get something out sooner, and something went wrong. So we know that it can be better.
And I'll also say Maryland is next. We're trying to do one in each jurisdiction this year. That was our sort of leadership team goal. So the next one will be in Maryland. We're going to wait a month or two. We want to sort of space them out through the year so we can have feedback, you know, throughout the year rather than sort of one at a time there. But we will learn from this session, and hopefully the next one will be even better attended, and we'll have more feedback to give. Okay, thank you. So now I'm going to turn the floor over to Carl, who's our Safety and Security Committee Chair. He has some action items for us. Carl.
Acting Chair. I'd like to make a motion to put the letter on page 5, 6, and 7 on the floor.
Second.
Okay. So then opening it for debate, let me just introduce briefly what the Safety and Security Subcommittee did. We were charged by Ms. Bowersox, Assistant General Manager for Customer Service Communications and Marketing, to help them improve a variety of different processes with how WMATA communicates with customers. There were 3 specific questions we were endeavoring to answer, and they are in bold on pages 5 and 6. And the Safety and Security meeting, Cara, Marianne, Carol, myself, Ben, and Deborah worked through for 2 hours and discussed a variety of different avenues, and we've come to the FORAC with the recommendation of passing this letter and sending it on to WMATA, so hopefully they can take a look at some of these changes and make some improvements. In brief, the 3 questions we are trying to answer is, what is the best communications channel for riders to learn in advance about emergency preparedness? What would riders want to know before you're caught in an emergency situation? And how to improve onboard evacuation emergency signage. With that introduction, I'll go ahead and open it up to the floor for discussion. And if anyone has substantive changes or suggestions they would like to add, feel free to propose an amendment to do so. And if we can stay away from the stylistic things, that would be helpful and speed the process. And there are a few little minor edits I've already made related to that. So,
yes, stylistic changes, we can talk to Carl about those. Just to clarify, though, we are going to be moving the second letter, which is on page 8, in a separate motion.
Correct.
Okay, so we are just looking at the first letter for this particular motion. All right, before we get into debate, any public comments briefly? Seeing none. Debate is open. Any comments on this letter? Amendments, anything? Yes.
I read the letter and I had a really hard time trying to figure out what the recommendations were. They were spread throughout the document.
I can't hear you. Are you your mic on?
My mic is on, yes. Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. So I read the letter, but I had a very hard time finding the recommendations that we're proposing to Metro. So is it possible just to have a section either in the middle of the report or the end that just outlines all the recommendations? I think it's easier for Metro and certainly easier for the general public to find the recommendations.
Well, we tried to identify specific suggestions because they were really trying to push us on rather than broad-based statements like what do you actually want to see done. So we tried to list that out in a way that is most helpful. I mean, I guess we'd be happy to add in a short paragraph as this new second paragraph that summarizes kind of our general themes, and we could adopt it even from one of the original paragraphs that we cut out in the editing process.
I would call that a stylistic change, if that's okay. I think we can, he seems to be open to it, yeah. So I think we can say
done.
That. Okay. Yes.
I have a quick question, which may not even, I don't know, we'll see. But have we looked at, like, other metro systems? Have we done, like, sort of our own research to look at, like, how, like, New York handles emergencies, like, the larger cities that are similar to ours, so that maybe we can sort of, you know, copy those metro systems? Because they don't seem to have as many problems as we, and maybe they're problems that I don't know about, but they don't seem to have as many communication problems as we do in terms of an emergency.
We, at the meeting, we discussed the London Underground, we discussed New York, and we discussed Chicago, including displayed different options that are available to those systems. And some of those recommendations, some of the styles that, for instance, New York has kind of made it into our suggestions. If there's other things you know of, by all means, we're certainly willing to include those as well, probably. But Carol might have an additional comment.
As a matter of fact, in looking at the letter, we did incorporate mm-hmm. some specific things. I think someone brought a brochure. I think Chris Barnes brought a brochure from the New York City, from the MTA, and we incorporated on page 6 under item 3, we talked about signage should include how to handle other types of incidents, medical, fire, and passenger, because that was how the brochure that the MTA system in New York breaks it down. So we did, without citing those systems, incorporate some of the ideas that were proposed by the public and others about those systems.
Should we maybe cite those systems? I think it would be sort of beneficial to us to say, you know, it's used here, it's been used here for many years, and it sort of works, you know, why don't we try to, sometimes it helps, like when you're doing like certain works, you cite to, you know, this is your evidence. So you can say, you know what, it's worked here for how many years, you know, let's try it here. I don't know.
I can persuade myself either way. Sometimes citing somebody else's stuff gets people's feathers ruffled, and sometimes it works. I mean, I don't have any opinion.
Yeah, I'd suggest maybe that's another stylistic change that we can deal with. It seems like that's something that can be easily be done. Fred?
So these kind of things are probably more complicated than you would like to think. And I would at least think we should recommend that Metro engage an outside consultant who actually has experience in developing communication to public to work on this. They need to have so I'll just give you an example. Some of you may or may not notice, but there's a big campaign right now in D.C. around pedestrian safety. And it's been going on for several years. We probably never noticed it because several iterations of the campaign didn't work very well. And so the people that do this, which is COG, engaged a consultant to help them refine their work. I think what's suggested here is a nice start, but you really need to have someone who does this kind of work and that actually tests the message to find things that will actually work for people. So I think one of the things we should recommend is that they engage an outside consultant to come in and help them develop really strong communication message around the safety issues.
I think that's a good point. I do think that I don't have any I mean, I certainly know that they're not going to take this as the gospel and assume that this is the way to do it. We had a discussion at the committee subcommittee meeting about, obviously, they're going, you know, the WMATA RAC is not going to decide all of these things, and they're bringing in outside. I don't know if there's a consultant on this specific topic, but I mean, when we discussed, for instance, the graphic design and the layout of the emergency preparedness board, we were discussing and saying, obviously, you know, we're not going to choose where the boxes go in the right colors. So, I mean, I think we can add in a section that says we also encourage. I mean, I think it's assumed obvious, that that's already happening. I would be shocked if an agency was undergoing major changes like this and wasn't consulting a source other than 21 people who are volunteers. Nothing against our qualifications, but I mean, I'd be happy to add in a sentence about that if you like.
I mean, I think it's of the same substance you already have in there, so.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry, just Debbie.
I want to go back to what Candy was talking about. Look at other cities as a model, how they improve community safety and security. We have to be careful. We don't want to copy exactly what they're doing, because D.C. is a different city than New York City. So we have to be careful how we express, how we put that in the letter.
I want to make 2 points about the consultant. I personally, as a member of the RAC, don't want to go on record suggesting that Metro hire any more consultants. But secondly, one of the things that I've become very conscious of in the last 3 months since we've been talking about these committees is Metro has an unfocused marketing campaign. If you go through Metro stations, you'll see something in red that talks about food, and then you'll see something in blue that talks about something else. I think they need a whole global approach to branding and marketing and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, maybe we should do 2 things. One is, as a part of the stylistic change, maybe just allude to the fact that some of these are in practice in other systems or something like that without trying to be specific. But I think the real problem, stepping back, which we really didn't address, is that Metro stuff is all over the map. I believe that they combine consultants and focus groups and in-staff people, so it's kind of a messy situation, and I think it could be improved. But I don't know if we want to deal with that now or deal with that later on as a part of maybe customer operations committee, for example.
Well, and if I could jump in, I would agree that, you know, there is kind of, I think that is a larger discussion. For this letter, at least, we tried to stick to the 3 specific questions that they wanted answers to, rather than engage and expand far beyond. Obviously, there are a lot of larger, some systemic, some communication methods, some, you know, styles, communication issues within the system. I don't think anyone is denying that. But when we were presented with 3 very specific questions that they wanted a uniquely rider perspective on. So that's, just wanted to provide that comment. Barbara?
So the general theme, what I'm hearing is 2 things. One is, gee, it's great to consider what other systems are doing. And 2 is, let's make sure we have, there are experts on this. And there may well be, maybe both of those things are things Metro has already done. I guess it's just worth asking that. Because, for instance, if they haven't done a lot of review of what others do, then that's something that maybe we can partner with them for someone to gather, you know, in a structured way. You know, I know you had some samples of other places, but maybe there's some more structured way that they can gather, that we can review them and or between us and the experts that are there that say that these are the ways that people, you will get their attention. It's the colors, these are the whatever. So I think that's kind of a synthesis of everything I'm hearing.
Well, and perhaps we codify that in the letter as, and we also, you know, recognize the need for additional work on this and acknowledgement of industry best practices that are not in place in the system now, but that are prevalent in systems nationwide, if that works.
Yes. I know that as part of our work last year when I was in the leadership committee, I remember specifically that our GM was very gung-ho about knowing for us to help him also research what is being done in other systems. So I think that maybe a sentence that we have reviewed or we explored, you know, the systems in New York or whatever, Boston or whatever other, you know, London, and we have come up with this, and that's all we have to say. We don't have to say this, you know, what they do or what, but just that we did review those.
My one hesitation on that would be that I would not certainly call the review of the other systems academic and wide-reaching. I mean, we did look at a variety of different things on their websites and things like that, but I would hate to make it sound like we, you know, conducted a thorough review. But I think if we reference adopting industry best practices and supplementing what we've suggested here with those, maybe that would cover it.
Patrick? Oh, Cara?
Well, I'd just like to say that I'm pretty sure it was over 2 hours that we were in here, so we had a really long conversation, and all of us obviously had more concerns than the three questions that they asked. However, the next day when I was watching the morning news, they were already talking about that Metro was in the works of redesigning the thing that they're asking for our feedback from. So I feel like, yeah, we could add a paragraph to encompass, you know, the various things that were said, but I feel like it's more important that we get our voices heard. I mean, I think we should send this on its way because, like I said, I think they're already in the works. I'm not even sure if this will be read, but I think it's better if we move it along.
Is that a motion to end debate right there?
Is
that what you're saying?
Well, maybe if...
Just to clarify, that is what a motion to debate, to end debate does. It ends debate when it gets circular, et cetera. Just saying. Patrick.
I promise I will follow this comment up with a motion to end debate. The precedent, I think Metro has set a precedent on its own, actually, for working with other transit authorities to do this type of messaging, whether it is emergency messaging or personal safety messaging. And the one that I'm thinking of specifically is the, if you rub against me, I'll expose you, that not only did they borrow from the T in Boston, from the Massachusetts Bay Transport Authority, but they actually have the T credited on the thing. And so to Deborah's point about copying, that's a worry. You know, we don't want to take a cookie cutter that's shaped like New York City and try to stamp it over D.C. But the idea, and actually Kurt mentioned it in a tweet just now, the idea of learning from best practices is a business universal. And if we don't approach this from that standpoint, and as Carol pointed out, you know, that was something that was incorporated. I think we're missing out on the lessons that other jurisdictions have learned. And so I think, you know, whether or not we use what works for New York or we use what works for San Francisco or whatever, as long as we're looking at those things, I think that puts us in a good space. And with that, I move to end debate.
Okay. Thank you. So we have a motion to end debate on the floor. All in favor of ending debate on this motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Okay, we're going to move directly to a vote on this measure. All in favor of adopting the letter with stylistic changes? Yes.
And the additional paragraph summarizing for
yes.
Karen, and the additional mention of consultant and industry best practices per Fred and several other people.
Yes, which we'll put under the banner of stylistic changes there. All in favor of adopting the letter with stylistic changes as mentioned, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, the motion passes. And now, Carl, on to motion number two.
I'd like to make a motion to pass or open debate on page 8, the letter related to the incident communications panel workshop proposed by Metro staff and the board.
Could you just give us a 2-minute overview of how this letter came about, just real quick for the RAC members who may not have been here earlier?
Second.
Thank you. Okay, to briefly introduce this, in December, the leadership team met with the Metro board and senior leadership of the Metro staff, and they provided a page 9 of 9, which was the incident communications public workshop proposal, which was meant to follow up on many of the issues raised at the October, I believe it was October or late September, incident communications panel that was held at the Metro Safety and Security Board meeting, on which I participated and is currently viewable on YouTube. The Safety and Security Committee looked over the proposal. We formulated a letter summarizing our recommendations. In short, we suggested moving forward on it. We provided a few additional comments about ensuring there is a specific outreach plan for that event and that it is at a time and place accessible to the public. I think everyone agrees incident communications need to further improve. The Green Line meltdown in January and the subsequent investigation underscored that. Smaller but still significant occurrences such as that, which occurred this morning and yesterday, show that the problem is not yet solved, and to Metro's credit, they've proposed bringing specific communication staff and operations people together in this workshop that would be open to the public to get specific input on these specific questions outlined. That said, I think we can open it up to the public for any comments and then RAC members. And
okay, so the motion on the floor is to adopt this letter as written. We'll have the same sort of rules as before. Stylistic changes can be addressed to Carl offline as necessary. Are there any comments from the public before we start debate on this? Yes.
Carl, I hope this will be taken as a substantive recommendation. I think that the letter could be beefed up to sort of motivate the issue of why emergency communication or why incident communication matters, specifically the fact, and Chief Pavlik was the latest in a series of people to point this out, that it seems like self-evacuation is becoming the norm rather than the exception, and that seems to be motivated in particular by a lack of communication. And if that's brought to the board in a very clear way, if it should, I would hope, have the effect of you know, garnering even more support for this event and getting the board and staff to really put their weight behind it and take it seriously. You know, if you can draw the sort of cause and effect relationship and say we have poor incident communication and that doesn't just result in riders that are upset, it actually results in riders that, you know, as Chief Pavlik said, are very quick to pull the emergency handle now and potentially jump out onto live tracks and potentially make things far worse than they ever were to begin with. And it all comes back to communication at the core.
I don't want to speak out of hand, but I do think that part of this is motivated by recognizing that self-evacuation should not be self-evacuation can be avoided when proper communication methods are used and when people have the knowledge and certainty that help is coming and trust in the system. I mean, I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but that is my sense. So thank you for your suggestion.
One more public comment.
Thanks for putting this together. Again, I like seeing this kind of action from the council. I didn't see much mention of the fact that some of these problems are technical and maintenance and things that actually require someone taking a screwdriver or something to fix. And I'd like it if you guys could be a little bit more specific about the PA problems, the speaker problems, it's not just how you communicate, it's the fact that the devices that are already in place are not working, and they need to be fixed. And hopefully you can, like Kurt said, beef it up a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
It takes Metro, they say 10 minutes. If something's gone or broken for 10 minutes, then they'll issue an alert and all that. I think that needs to be addressed. It has to be quicker.
Even if the volume significantly increased in your inbox? I mean, I got 10 Metro Rail alerts today before I left my house.
But they don't start anything until 10 minutes. And by that time, it could be 15 or 20.
Okay.
You know, I'm just going on what they're saying. But they're saying 10 minutes, you know, a lot can happen in 10 minutes, so maybe they need to cut that in half. As far as inboxes, you can always delete that.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Okay. Any discussion? Yes, Carol.
I just have one comment in addition to generally supporting what's been said by the public. I think the last sentence, which is a very long sentence, in the third paragraph, I think we should say, in order for this to be successful, we must have Metro staff help develop and implement. It's not like an option. In other words, as was alluded to before, in other words, for this to work out, we've got to have their involvement in developing an outreach plan, not just saying it would be nice.
I'm fine with that change. I mean, I will say that, you know, this proposal did start with Barbara Richardson and Lynn Bowersox. It did not start from us. So I do think that they feel like they have a vested interest in some success, I think. So I mean, I'm fine with that change, but just as an editorial comment.
Barbara?
I'm not sure yet. I don't understand what you just said, but I don't understand why these two are separate. Well, I mean, they're both about incidents and emergency preparedness. I know some were specific questions, but you have kind of closing paragraphs. I mean, somebody enlighten me there?
These are two separate taskings from the board. One of them is, here are some questions that we would like writer feedback on. That's what we just voted on. This is, they've been waiting for us to respond to their invitation to participate in this incident communications panel. So this is our letter saying, yes, we are interested in following up on this process and keeping going with it.
And if I can jump into, from my sense is that, I mean, the incident communications is a larger discussion that is going to get a lot more feedback. Now, I do think that there are some, pun intended, trains rolling on improving the in-station signage and things like that. So if we wait to send like the first letter until after we solicit additional, this big thing, I think we may miss out on an opportunity. I think that's why they're separate. And the public communication workshop proposal came from staff actually before the questions that we addressed in the last letter. So came up first, and then we addressed it last here at the RAC.
Okay, so maybe this is stylistic still. It just feels like they're so connected. Why not at least refer to one and the other? Because otherwise it just seems like, what's the difference here? And I mean, I know there's a difference, but it seems like one is very connected to the other.
I mean, if you like, I would be fine adding in a sentence in the letter that says, we also, as you're aware, pass specific communication suggestions on May 1st and hope those comments are included as well. I mean, they're going to the same, these are all going to go to the same people. You know, it's not like one's going to one department and the other. But I'm fine adding that reference in.
Trust your
judgment. Okay.
Try.
Two improvements. One is in paragraph 2, you say Metro staff's proposal for a public workshop. I don't think it should be limited to a public workshop. If you could just put a parentheses S after that, that would be great. Because this is not something that you're going to do in one workshop. And the second one, in the same Same with workshop in paragraph 3. And this one, I think that I just removed the majority when you say place accessible to majority of riders. There is no such place. You just want it accessible to riders.
Gotcha. So get rid of to the majority.
Yeah.
Or the majority of, rather, to accessible to riders. I also am going to I'm fine with those changes. Thank you. I'm also going to suggest adding in a sentence that says, we also recognize that communications infrastructure within the system requires additional investment and improvement and can be constraining on any communication issues. We hope the panel can specifically solicit suggestions on what improvements would be most helpful.
Okay. Anyone else? Candace.
This is sort of a random question. Do we know if they do, like, you know how Homeland Security does certain run-throughs, like if this incident happens, this is how things are going to happen? I'm assuming Metro does those run-throughs. Do they do that also? I'm assuming that they do that. Do
like emergency
know?
Preparedness yes, drills?
Metro does drills, yes.
Okay. So how come we're not more okay, yeah, sorry. Okay.
I mean, I will say that the drill question was discussed at length at the Safety and Security Subcommittee meeting in relation to the other letter, and we talked for at least several minutes about if we should recommend, you know, specific, you know, a drill or anything more wide-reaching so that people are familiar. Of course, you practically have a drill every day when you commute, so...
A lot of these things are videotaped, so couldn't they put, like, a link on the website?
Well,
is there a link already?
No, well, but that was in part of the...
In the
previous letter that we talked about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's one of the... We actually suggested specific videos that can address specific emergency situations so that you
like
can...
Like an after-school message.
Right. Is it possible for it to run on those? Do we know if it's possible to run on those LCD screens that they have? Or?
I just suggest this is a substantive issue that we're going to deal with in the actual panel itself. This letter is just saying, yes, we want to have this panel.
I'm having more of an internal discussion, and I just thought, hey, might
these
well
are good suggestions, but we'll get there. Carol.
I move the question.
Okay. We have a motion to close debate on this motion. Seconded. Thank you. All in favor of closing debate on this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, we're going to move directly to a vote on this question, which is to adopt the letter as written with some stylistic changes as suggested. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. The motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Anything else from the safety committee, Carl, before we move on? We have a meeting next week.
Yes.
We're open to suggestions for the agenda. See me after the meeting.
Thank you.
Karen, you want to give us a recap of the Operations and Communications Committee?
Sure. The Operations and Communications Committee does not have any action items for this particular meeting, but when we met on April the 17th, we prioritized our work plan for the year, which includes seven proposals that we divided among the members to lead. So the process that we devised was each member would lead one of the proposals and develop a strategy and the resource needs and staff needs for those particular proposals. And I'll just highlight what some of them are. Our number one priority was addressing track work. Number two was addressing customer complaints provided from the riders to the Metro staff. Number three was standards Metro should use to select bus stops as candidates for physical improvements. And number four was improving interaction with riders between staff and riders. Number five was how can we help Metro encourage bus riders to enter and exit buses more quickly? And let's see, number six was devising an approach to address courtesy communication. So that sort of goes along the same lines as the proposal that we approved earlier. The next one was Metro's Web 2s and mobile apps. Metro wanted us to provide feedback. So some of these issues we plan to meet and discuss and brainstorm on best ways to address these particular issues. Some of the other items that we discussed at the meeting was smart trip glitches. We received an article and some feedback from riders on smart trip glitches, and we asked John to provide an update on the status of Metro's electronic payment system. It's our understanding that Metro is currently conducting a study. So we wanted to know what Metro was on this particular issue. And we also discussed RAC's policy on responding to public comments. And let's see, Barbara and Carol agreed to meet with the executive leadership on this issue and provide a report at our next subcommittee meeting. And we also discussed the Franconia Springfield communication system, but it's our understanding that the communication system has been improved. And if you have any action items that you want to discuss at the next meeting, please let me know.
Okay, thank you. Upcoming meetings. Anybody know of any? Before I move on to that, James, you want to just touch base on the Budget and Finance Committee?
Thank you. Next week, we're going to have our first Budget and Finance meeting, committee meeting. It'll be here from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. Please note this is the first formal meeting, and we should elect, I'm the temporary chair, but we need a permanent chair, and we should do that there. And I would like to ask John, what is the prospect of having somebody from the Budget and Finance Office being there at the meeting next week?
This is the budget overview for the to explain Metro's budget. We actually requested this last time, mm-hmm. but he wasn't able to come out last time.
Right.
I will mention that the Budget and Finance Committee is smaller than the other ones, so the possibility of two or three people might be the full committee on that one. Personally, I think that that's sort of part of the job, but maybe that's just me. I mean, I know I'm a member of that committee. James is, Fred is. Really? Anyone else planning on being at that one that we know of now? Carol as well. So that's four. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, doesn't have to be the main guy. It can be anyone who can talk about the budget, really.
I can't help but say this. The main guy is a girl.
Ah.
Okay.
Thank you. That is a worthy correction.
She's the officer of the of WMATA, and in my opinion, one of the most competent people they have in their senior staff. But that's not why I really interrupted, but I would have anyway. I would like to make a pitch that if as many RAC members as possible come to that meeting, because if somebody of Carol Kissel's stature or one of her people, direct reports, is going to take the time to be here at 7:30 for a budget overview, it probably is a good idea for as many people as possible to hear that, because it will inform any work that we do in the future. This year, we got a pass because there was nothing really exciting about the 2014 budget. But if you look at the compact among the jurisdictions of the board, they are sort of committed to looking at fare increases every other year, am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
So an overview now would put us in a good position to ask to be informed and educated. So I would like to make the pitch for people looking at that as a...
Well, I know that we're going to be here, the security people.
Exactly.
I'm sure we'll probably run over a little bit, so we'll probably end up being there at 7:30.
Right.
But I think it, you know, if we're going to get a thorough overview of the process and everything, that it's worth it for everybody to be there if they can.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to upcoming meetings. Are there any community meetings or other metro meetings that anybody's aware of that we should highlight for the next period between RAC meetings? Sir.
The final meeting of the study on the Route 80 plus public, final public meeting of the study on the Route 80 plus is scheduled for Wednesday evening, May 22nd. So this should be coming up on the Metro website soon.
Do we know where that is yet, or is that also TBD?
I do, but I just can't remember.
Okay, fair enough.
I know when it is.
Somewhere on the 80 line.
I know it's a Wednesday that there aren't any RAC activities, so. It's somewhere, I believe, in Northeast.
Okay.
But I can send that information out, and it'll pop up. There'll be a press release a couple weeks later.
Thank you. Okay. We're at our open mic period. Anybody have any comments, thoughts? Right?
So I don't know where this falls.
But falls under open mic.
So I'm probably the only one that does this. So I ride in from Vienna every day. And the Metro has been doing a project for about a year and a half out there to redo the bus area. And it appears to be a project that has no ending. And it would be interesting to find out if the Metro has any plans to finish the project and why a project that should have only taken 3 months has taken 18 months. And the reason I'm really curious is if This is a project where you can where Metro's renovations are visible. You can see them every day, unlike track work, which you can't see. And which I'm curious about is track work just like how they've done this project? Mm-hmm. Because 18 months to do almost nothing is unbelievable.
We will ask about this. Cara?
I'm not sure if you guys recently read or already know about this, but the plan to redesign Bethesda Metro, I'm not sure if that's already on the table for discussion in the future of the RAC. But I think it'd be interesting to look at because as I've read, it's going to cost a few million dollars, and really, what is the point besides changing brown to steel? I mean, I know people don't like the brown 70s look, but I don't see why that's really a priority right now. And I think it's something that we should ask about.
I believe Patrick has a stake in all of this, and maybe he can answer that partially.
Well, some of it, but at least from the disability side, I know that the AAC is looking to, Station of the Future is looking at elements of that. So we're looking at it from the accessibility point of view. But more importantly, I think we're looking at it also from the lighting point of view. I think one of the things that's important, and this isn't just an AAC issue, is that, and I think the RAC needs to also weigh in on this, is we're looking to redo the lighting standards that haven't been updated basically since mid-70s or late 70s. So that's one of the things that's going to be coming out of that the Bethesda, I think, study. And I think it's important for RAC to weigh in on that and to have input into that. But I know that we're going to be looking at and being involved in the Bethesda station from the accessibility point of view. I also think it's excellent to have the RAC involved so that, you know, what we get to the board and what we have for the board as far as recommendations are joint recommendations. So.
Thank you. Yeah, that is one of the primary reasons why that's being done is for accessibility issues. And I believe even the change from brown to silver is actually one of those things that, you know, it's the contrast is easier for people to see, things like that. So, say what? Right. Yeah. Barbara?
Well, my thoughts are that, you know, when we had a lot of the work talk about track work, we said, gee, we were really enlightened by why there needed to be so much and why there needed to be such long weekends. And it helped to understand what's behind it. And I think everybody has heard about, my God, it's going to cost that much. And there was a bus stop in Arlington that was the bus stop of the future or something that was also this huge price tag. And I think that we, I think that at the very least, then there needs to be some education or some mm-hmm. communication about why would we do this? Because people, people are impressed upon that it's, they think it's cosmetic. And if it's something much deeper than that, and those things cost a lot of money, then I think that's a good thing to share. Or else they're going to be just like, you know, people's initial reaction is, what a waste of money.
Right. No, yeah, and I agree. I mean, obviously, I want it to be of use. And so I think lighting is a big thing. But from what I've heard, it's I haven't heard anything about lighting. From what I heard, it's only about design. Yeah. And having glass, and which glass can get very dirty, or whatever. But I feel like, yeah, I think we should have a little bit of
discussion. It's true that that element of the design process was not highlighted in the public communications part of it. So. Carl? Please.
And I think other people were in front of me.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Thanks. I appreciate it. I know as far as bus stops are concerned that my committee has gotten reports from the 8 jurisdictions on bus stops, accessibility, where they are as far as that sort of thing. The interesting thing, I think, that the RAC is aware that because it's improvements are being made at a jurisdictional level, it's up to the jurisdictions to be able to make those improvements. But I think the recommendations have been going to the board, and WMATA staff is looking at those recommendations. So I think that I'm not quite sure the best way to work through what's already being done, but I don't want to see the RAC sort of spin its wheels if recommendations are already being made to the board with respect to what we want to do with respect to bus stops. I can take this back, if that helps, to find out where bus stop upgrades and recommendations are in the process with WMATA, and maybe feed that back through John.
Okay, maybe we can talk about this after the meeting a little bit and see, you know, process-wise.
See where we are. Yeah, right. Because I think that it's important if we're making if suggestions are being made and improvements are being made, that the RAC know what's going on, so we're both on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Karen, sorry.
My issue was completely different as well. I really want to go back to some of the violence that we're seeing on the Metro system by the D.C. public school students. And while I appreciate the presentation that the police chief gave to us, I feel as if the transit police are monitoring the situation but not really doing anything that effectively prevents these types of situations. If Metro is the transportation system for the D.C. public school system, then we need some accountability. We need accountability by parents, we need accountability by the school system, and we need to put in measures to prevent these types of incidents. So what is Metro doing? Has Metro come up with any proposals to address this kind of issue, like not letting children under the age of 16 ride the system during school hours without a parent? I mean, honestly, I think this is we can't prevent crime, but I think this is a population that we can put very strict measures in place to prevent violence on the train system. So
afterwards, maybe we can talk about, we did do a youth town hall. The RAC actually sponsored one last year and talked about a lot of these kinds of issues. And maybe that's something that we need to revisit just in terms of either the concept, but also some of the do-outs from that may not have sort of filtered through into the arena of action. But let's talk about that after the meeting. Alex?
Yeah, actually, I agree with what Karen just said insofar as I think we need to encourage everybody involved in the Metro to be a little bit more creative in terms of looking at solutions. And that's one I think that is at least plausible. I do want to talk also about the Bethesda Metro design issue because it came up last week, and I've been sort of ruminating on it all week. And I just, the more I think about it, the sillier that I think it is. And I think Barbara brings up a good point in that if Metro doesn't communicate something to customers about it, then it's a really big problem. But on the other hand, the bottom line is, in a system that is as broken as the Metro is right now, you know, yes, it's incredibly important to make sure that the needs of every customer is met. But primary, in my mind, is focusing on safety and reliability of the system. And that is not something that a cosmetic change that's going to cost millions of dollars when people are facing a fare hike next year is going to be effective at all. So, I mean, I think it's something we're going to have to think about more, and I wish that we had said something last week personally, but it's a big problem in my mind.
Thank you. Carl?
I just wanted to mention one thing, or two things, rather. The safety and security meeting next week at 6 o'clock, we will be electing a new chair, permanent chair, and also talking about our work plan. So if you have any comments, or we'd love to see you in person. The other thing that I'd mention that I think probably deserves further discussion, just to fill everyone in, at the safety and security meeting, there was a lengthy discussion, probably 45 minutes, about the concept of a WMATA pledge to riders, contract to riders, list of expectations of what riders should expect in the system, that sort of thing.
Bill of Rights.
Bill of Rights. Pick your language and how you wish to describe it. We kind of mentioned it in the first letter at the end when we said we strongly support developing a clear outline of what customers can expect of Metro when they're traveling within the system. That line should address Metro performance both in emergencies and during normal day-to-day operation. But I do think, considering the interest from members of the public and from the committee members, it could be something that we want to discuss further. And I think the chair might have had some thoughts on that as well. But just to flag for people to start thinking about, obviously, you know, we want to do something. If we want to do something, it should be done within reason. But I do think it's a very good discussion, and the fact that we spent so much time at the last meeting warrants that there could be some desire. And the example that was cited was that Chicago Long Island Railroad has a list of expectations that riders can expect when they're on the system. Now, it should be stated that they're very vague and not very binding. If you just look at them, they're very generic. And but it is an interesting concept that I think we should explore further, not necessarily right now.
I'll just say that the leadership team is unanimous in support of this particular issue, and it is something that we are already starting to think about, starting to work on a little bit. We want to come to the RAC with something that is fully baked on this issue. There are a lot of issues that we need to sort of work out before it comes to the full RAC, or to the committee level for that matter, but it is something that we are already starting to talk about. So expect a motion on this in the near future. Cara?
If Marianne wants to go first, mine is kind of light.
I want to go, I guess, what I've seen with having the subcommittee meetings and subsequent actions is, in my mind, we're not always in sync with what's going on, that we, you know, like we are writing the letter where action has already been taken. Fine. What I'm seeing with all the discussion about Bethesda, number one, we don't know. I had the same initial impression about the Bethesda Metro, but with other things that I have seen or heard and heard tonight, it says it's a bigger thing. It's still not done yet, which is where, if we understood, we could see where it might link with other interests and put forth some thoughts that Metro could use, as opposed to just leaving it, we don't understand it, we think it's stupid, before we know what it is. So I personally favor using the Bethesda as an example that we need to look into because it's a bit ahead of time.
Thanks. This is something that we brought up with the members of the board during our last quarterly meeting, the desire and, frankly, need of the RAC to be involved earlier on in the decision-making process before things are brought to the board, before things are finally cooked up. There's a balance to be struck, though, between what you can or want to release to the public at certain points in the decision-making process. So there's a balance there, but we've definitely started that discussion. Cara?
So like I said, this comment is a little bit light, but just since we are early and I have everyone's attention, I know we've discussed a little offline before about getting together in a non or an unofficial way to merely enjoy each other's company. I just wanted to throw it out there if anyone wanted to continue that talk so that we can see each other outside of our name thingies. Just a thought.
So moved.
It's worth noting that Hill Country is opening up a barbecue pit across the street
eventually on Friday. Some of us had hoped that it would have been open tonight. Maybe not. No, that's a good suggestion. Thanks for making it. Anything else for open mic? Do we have a motion to adjourn? Seconded? All in favor of adjourning, please say aye. All opposed? All right, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.